sets it up, because your professor here is among the most respected voices in our region for public policy, governmental affairs, and bringing to light issues of the day. And Gateway certainly is one of those. Also, I couldn't resist coming back to a political science class. Political science was my major when I was in college. And very much like the current president, my grades are also under seal. So I can tell you. But, you know, Gateway Tunnel, and I'm not going to give, because this is an informal setting, a formal kind of a speech or address. What the Gateway Tunnel project is something nobody thinks of. Every train that goes from Amtrak train from Washington, D.C. up to Boston, and every New Jersey transit train that goes from Newark into Penn Station in New York crosses over a bridge. If you've ever been on the train, you probably never paid attention. It's called the Portal North Bridge. And then you go under the Hudson River in this two-tube tunnel. One goes into New York, one comes out of New York. Now, these pieces of infrastructure were built in 1908. And it's important to understand that, you know, now we're 110 years old, these things. They were first put into service in 1910. And that's too old for infrastructure that is carrying passengers on a daily basis. The economy is dependent upon it. Your jobs, people who work in New York City, their jobs dependent upon it. And it has been this line, the lifeblood of the economy of the country, because if you take the GDP from Washington up to Boston, 20% of the GDP of the whole country is along that rail line, that northeast corridor. And so they've been incredible assets. You know, you probably have heard your family say, you know, they don't build it like they used to. I doubt we could build tunnels today that have stood the test of time that these have. But they are now old, they are failing, and yet 200,000 people every day are going through this tunnel and over this bridge. Now, they weren't designed to carry the type of traffic they have now. And I just want to put this into not numerical context as much as to understand what was going on at the time. First of all, in 1910, President Roosevelt was in office, Teddy Roosevelt, the first one. The Titanic was still under construction, hadn't been put out on the seas yet. The Wright brothers' plane was only being perfected. It was the first time people were going in the air. 13,000 people, on average, made that crossing under the Hudson River when the tunnel opened. Today, 200,000 people. That's 15 times the traffic it was originally designed to carry. When it opened, 100 trains would make that crossing each day. Today, we have 450 trains, 4.5 times the traffic it was designed to take. You know, that's math. Here are some other things that were going on in 1910 when the tunnel opened. The average hour pay rate for employees, 22 cents an hour. The cost of a new car, the Henry Ford's Model T, was $400. You could buy a brand new car. You could go to the movies for 7 cents. And it was a silent movie. They didn't have talkies at that point. At that point, only 2%, 2 out of 100, households in America had electricity. And the Yankees had yet to win a World Series. So things have changed dramatically since those days. We've come a long way, except two things have never changed one bit. The Portal North Bridge that I mentioned before, and the North River Tunnel. They're exactly the same as they were when a movie was set. But yet, we continue to jam all of these people, all of these trains, into two antiquated, slender tubes that were not designed for the purpose. It's long past time that we retire these assets. Age is but one difficulty. We also have had big problems with the elements. So Superstorm Sandy in 2012. 13 million gallons of salt water was forced through these tunnels. They were taken out of commission. And of course, the water flowed out, it receded. But what it left behind were salt and chloride all over the walls, the track bed, and that salt continues to eat away day by day at the concrete bench walls that house, they're about as high as that table, and they're concrete block walls, and in them are cables carrying 12,000 volt electrical current that is what powers the trains. They're now becoming exposed to view. They're also, for workmen who are having to make repairs, they're exposed. So we have now that age problem. But yet every day, we ask 200,000 people to, and by the way, that's 13% of the entire workforce of New York, coming from New Jersey. We ask these people every day to play transit roulette. Every day they have to bet, am I going to get to work on time? Will I get home from work on time to see my family? If my kid is in a school play, will I be able to get there? If I have a job interview, will I be there on time or make a horrible late impression, much like I did when I walked in here earlier? Now we have the Portal North Bridge that I mentioned. This is a drawbridge bridge, but not the ones that you would know about that open like this and ships come and then it closes. This is a swing bridge. It opens this way. And very often, about 11% of the time, it fails to close all the way. When you're on a bridge suspended over the river, carrying thousands of people, you have to close. And very often the rails come almost into alignment, but this isn't horseshoes. You have to have perfect alignment. And so what we do is we have a guy, believe it or not, with a sledgehammer who goes out onto the track and knocks these rails into perfect alignment. Should this be happening in 2019? Now, it doesn't sound like much if the bridge doesn't close, but if it doesn't close, 80,000 people from one failure to close will be late for work or late getting home. As I say, you don't have to be a rail expert to know that in the United States, this should not be happening in 2019 in the greatest metropolitan area of the country. So why hasn't anything been done about it? I've been chairman and on Gateway now for a year, almost exactly a year. And I've thought about this all the time. How could you not address this? And I think that the answer is that this tunnel is both literally and figuratively underwater. It's kind of out of sight, out of mind. You don't see it. And so, you know, it isn't a pressing need because it's sort of hidden. Now, if you pulled this out of the water, you could string it across the Hudson like the George Washington Bridge, and you saw the condition it was in, the public outcry would be so extreme that we'd have taken it down. Now, there are a lot of, I don't want to bore you with the statistics, but you know, if one tube goes out, there's an electrical problem, concrete falls onto the track, and we have to shut down one tube, we lose 75% of our capability. If it was shut down for a long period of time, we would lose billions of dollars in economic activity. If that happened, the government would lose billions of dollars in tax they would charge on that business activity. People would no longer be able to get to work. If you can't get to work, pretty soon you're going to have to leave the area. If you start leaving the area, you're going to have to start selling homes in blocks. If you're doing that, prices are going to drop. It's estimated that perhaps as much as $22 billion in property value might be lost if that were to happen. And now people are going to resort to buses, although we can't add many more buses. New Jersey Transit has the bus lanes clogged. We estimate 38,000 people would resort to cars. Well, we already know what gridlock looks like, how congested our roads are. Add 38,000 more cars, and what's going to happen? They're going to be sitting idling, and that those emissions, what is that going to do to the environment? Now, all of these conditions, all of these nightmarish conditions are going to have an incredibly negative impact upon the stress level of all of us, and a psychological toll will be taken on all of us. And so it really can be said that if this tunnel sneezes, all of us are going to catch cold. But yet, it's all avoidable if we build this new bridge, which we already have engineered. We have our applications into the federal government. We have committed already $900 million of the $1.6 billion needed to build it. And we're waiting for Washington to give us the grants and loans that always come with these sized projects that are of national significance. Should also be pointed out that Amtrak, a federal agency, owns these rails, this tunnel, and this bridge. So you could say, why are we even putting any of our money in to help a federal asset? But we are, because it's vital to the area. So where's the money? Well, we submitted 1 year ago today, it happened right around the time I joined Gateway, our application for an environmental impact study. We submitted it in 22 months. Normally, it takes 4 years to put this environmental impact study in. We did it in 22 months. Normally, the federal government responds in 4 to 5 months and gives you an approval. We are here a year, no approval. And I promise you that our application hasn't so much been moved from this side of the desk to the other. And why is it? Why it is because of political science. And that's the relevance of this whole problem to your studies and your class and to Professor Harrison's work. It's no secret that New Jersey and New York voted for the president's opposition. It's no secret that the president and the minority leader of the Senate, Chuck Schumer, who's from New York, feud on almost everything. And it's no secret that Senator Schumer's number one priority is building the Gateway Tunnel. And so our application sits on that desk in Washington. 200,000 people are put at risk. 13% of the New York City workforce jeopardized. 20% of the nation's GDP in danger over a political tantrum, I suppose you could say. So where does that leave us? Because what we have is a national disaster happening in slow motion. If it happened overnight and the tunnel was shut down tomorrow, it would be the most compelling news story on every TV channel and internet source. It's all you would read about and all you would see. But because it's happening in slow motion, you only hear about it in classes like this. The administration puts out excuses because they just can't say we're being petulant and we're not approving it. So they come up with excuses, but they're all false. The Congress of the United States recognized that notwithstanding what the president is doing, this is a crisis. And it's not a joke, and it's not a game. Last year, the Congress appropriated $541 million for Gateway to use to begin its efforts. This year, they approved $650 million in one appropriation, $130 in another. It's about $1.4 billion over the last 2 years. But they can't say it's for Gateway. So it's camouflaged under pseudonyms so that they can put this in the budget and get us this money. It's a crazy way to operate the government, and it's an example for all of you in this class about the polarization, the us versus them, that is so damaging and divisive to this country now. There is no spirit of cooperation. No, your problem is my problem. And that is missing. But in November, the makeup of the House of Representatives changed, as you know. It became controlled by the Democrats. Only by, I guess, 50 or so votes. But what does that mean? Well, it means all the important committees in Congress that control money have now changed hands. So the chair of appropriations, the single most powerful committee in Congress, no bill can be funded without the approval of that committee, is chaired by Nita Lowey. Nita Lowey is a congresswoman from Westchester in New York, certainly a big advocate of the tunnel. The next most powerful committee is Commerce and Energy. New Jersey's Frank Pallone is the chair of that committee. So if you are a Kansas congressman and you want to build a post office in Kansas, you have to go to this committee. Frank Pallone's going to ask you, what's your position on Gateway, before he makes appropriations to Kansas. And we have friends also, Congressman Peter DeFazio, who's all the way over in Oregon, but he's the chair of transportation and infrastructure, and he gets it. So the point is, ladies and gentlemen of this class, elections matter. And that is why civic involvement, you know, you say, how does it tie to the Gateway Tunnel? It's everything to the Gateway Tunnel, because if you have the right elected officials, you'll get things done. Point is, we're going to get this tunnel built. The only issue is, are we going to do it in response to a disaster, or are we going to do it in a preventative way? And before we bring it to Professor Harrison, and doing my best not to be too political, you know, we hear all the time, make America great. I'm old enough to know that America is a great, great country. But we're not going to be able to stay great unless we take care of our infrastructure throughout the country. You all drive on these roads, you see the potholes. So in my mind, there's no better place to start keeping America great than in doing the largest infrastructure project in the country, the most sorely needed project, the Gateway Tunnel. So thank you for that, and questions, and Professor, and come up over here, yeah. Please. I hope I don't have to stay after we do this talk.
So I know that some people here are in my political science, in my American government class, others are studying leadership. So before we get on to Gateway, can you tell me a little bit about how you got where you are? So it all sounds so magical that you're a czar with a crown on your head and all this stuff, but for a student who is interested in, they're studying political science, how do they get from where they are now to where you are? So you went to law school.
To be honest with you, I can pinpoint it. It was way before law school.
Okay.
But I was fascinated as a young boy about government. I remember distinctly the assassination of President Kennedy and the impact it had on my parents. I was watching them the day that funeral. It was all over a weekend. All of you, are way too young for that, but it had an impact upon me. From that time on, I say I had this fascination, and I read every biography of a leader I could find because it always fascinated me how some young boy, some young woman, born in circumstances that hardly pointed to greatness, somehow achieved greatness. And what are the traits? I always wanted to see, what are the traits that make someone great, make them want to make a contribution? So that's really where it came from, and I do it to this day. It's my leisure time.
So throughout your career, Pete mentioned that you worked for governors of both political parties. Contextualize that, if you will, with the kind of rancor that's going on in terms of getting funding for this. I mean, I could see it if you were, I don't know, a stalwart Democrat who had campaigned against the president. But the reality is that you've worked for Republicans as well as Democrats. So there's no kind of traction that comes from that?
You know, I miss the good old days. I'm probably sounding like your grandparents now, but I really do miss the good old days when the heroes I read about, Lyndon Johnson, would bash heads all day long on the floor of the Senate, Senator Dirksen, who was the minority leader on the Republican side, and then they would meet after dinner and have drinks and play poker. And they were great friends, and they respected each other. They knew they had different agendas, but they worked together. And that's when the country went, was at its best. It didn't cater to this fringe or that fringe, but it found that great common ground with the 60 or 70% of the people. Today, we don't have this, because I can't talk to you if you're not in my party, because there's somehow something that we have lost civility, we have lost discourse. We tolerate behavior in our own party instead of saying, cut that, that's wrong. Yeah, you're in my party, but you shouldn't behave like that. And we are missing accountability. That is very dangerous, because then discourse ends, acrimony begins, and, well, look at what's happening in this country today.
So if we
And may I add one thing? I remember also the Cuban Missile Crisis. You guys really, I hope you teach a course on this one day, because this is the epitome of how decisions should be made. We were on the brink of nuclear war. I remember being in my class, and we had wooden desks, and we would had drills to encase the, you know, nuclear, and we would go under the, this one-inch wooden desk, like it's going to do anything to protect you. But we had these drills, and when President Kennedy spoke, and he said, you know, we may have to fight, the whole country, Democrats and Republicans were behind him. Why? Because he had built that trust. We don't have that. And if, God forbid, this president, and by the way, the one before him, had tried to mobilize the entire country, they couldn't do it. It's just too much partisanship.
So, Gateway consists essentially of four parts, right? Hudson River Tunnel, Portal Bridge, the other tunnel, and then improvements to Penn Station. Can you give us an idea of where we are with all of them in terms of progress?
So we could build the Portal North Bridge tomorrow, and I think we're going to have announcements very soon. We're shovel ready. We just need the federal government to give us the okay. We have an alternate plan we're working on. I think we're ready to go. We are engineering the tunnel actively. But, you know, the tunnel is $12 billion. I don't want to make light of these numbers. But when we ask contractors to bid on what they'll charge us to build it, to assemble a bid, shocking as this is, it costs a company about $25 or $30 million. It takes them months to research and figure out, I mean, they're committing to bringing something in where billions are at stake. They're not going to go and bid and spend that money unless they know we have the money. Right now they're saying, hey, the president says you're not getting it. So that's the jam we're in. The Penn Station piece, you know, to me is the cherry on the cake. I think it's, we need this $12 billion, then we're going to need another 10 or 12. I think that's going to be in another administration with another chair.
I was shocked to learn in Penn Station that there is no universal announcement system, which is, when you think about it, is terrifying. If, in case of a terrorist attack, there's no one source of information. You could be at New Jersey Transit or LIRR and not be able to get any kind of announcement. It's all coming from the unique perspective. So I hope that that cherry on top gets...
Well, we're going to... Penn Station can't survive in its current... So there are going to be Band-Aid fixes, wasted money, before we make it better. They are going to move the LIRR trains across to Moynihan. That will alleviate some of the congestion. But for any of you who become privileged enough to get to Europe or go to Asia or virtually any place outside of America, you'll be astonished to see how the train stations are in foreign countries. They make ours look, you're not going to be proud. So,
the application submitted to the federal government, where you recently was evaluated, and it was given a medium low priority. Were you surprised by that at all?
I was disappointed, only that they're playing politics, but I was not surprised.
What was the rationale? Why did they say it was a medium low priority? I mean, they had to say something other than they didn't vote for us.
So there was a lot of doublespeak, but it was all bogus, I mean, totally bogus. The biggest one is we didn't have skin in the game. So we've committed $6 billion of local money, and of the money we're asking for the federal government, we have to repay that with state money. It's very much like the mortgage on a house. You know, you borrow the money, but it's skin in the game because you have to repay it every month. They said they didn't count that as skin in the game. It's never, that position has never been taken before. It's without precedent. So it's complete BS.
In this administration, has there been a previous evaluation in this administration that ranked it higher?
Yes. So in the administration of President Obama, Republican Governor Chris Christie and Democrat Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York made a deal to fund this tunnel and this bridge in the last year of the Obama administration. In the first month of Trump's administration, they all met down there and he goes, I understand the deal, we're going to continue it. 3 months later, he changes his mind. the first grades that we got from our professor in Washington were medium high. So we were, Trump administration said we were medium high. He got mad at Schumer, and suddenly we're medium low. Nothing else changed. If anything, our application was stronger. We had more local money. We had further engineering. We had better cost estimates. The need is that much greater. How can you downgrade an urgently needed, this would pass, a five-year-old child can see that we desperately need this tunnel.
Talk a little bit, if you would, about the role you talked about Senator Schumer. What about Senator Booker and Senator Menendez? Have they advocated for this in the Senate?
Tireless. Senator Menendez, Senator Booker, Senator Schumer, Senator Gillibrand, by the way, they just happen to be Democrats. All the Republican recently retired New Jersey Congressman Frelinghuysen, terrific advocate. Peter King, Republican in New York, terrific advocate. We have advocates in both parties who have really worked hard, and we wouldn't have this $1.4 billion allocated over the last 2 years without the fight of our congressional leaders.
I noticed there was something, I think, on Politiker yesterday, perhaps. On Insider, that noted that there was a letter, and I don't recall if it was a bipartisan letter, but I remember seeing all of the names of the New Jersey Democrats to the Secretary of Transportation. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, the letter came out today, and it was 22 legislative leaders, and it was totally bipartisan. So they're once again pleading for the funding, saying that this is a national emergency, and calling, without being too technical, for the ROD, it's called Record of Decision, for our environmental impact study. There are two very important things. We've submitted that thing a year ago, the EIS, Environmental Impact Study. If the government gives us our earned ROD, Record of Decision, we can go out tomorrow and really ramp up this Portal North Bridge. We can acquire property, we can bid out the contract. Doesn't mean we have the money. That's a separate approval. But at least we could do the work. The vindictiveness has now reached a point that they won't even give us that, which is not tied to money. They won't even give us the head start by giving us this Record of Decision. And these 22, and by the way, there are a load of Republicans in there asking for this. By the way, Josh Gottheimer, you know, is a congressman here with Congressman King, Peter King, Republican, New York. They passed a piece of legislation called Plan B, which I applaud. And they said, look, if you're going to deny funding for this vital project, which can cost lives, cost jobs, cost economic benefit, you owe it as a responsible government to tell the people what's Plan B. And so they passed, they're putting in this legislation to compel the Trump administration to tell us, listen, if you're not building this, you must know that you have some other alternative. What is it? Because we sure can't figure it out.
I hate to ask this question, but so the ROD, the EIS has been sitting essentially in the Department of Transportation now for 11 months?
Well, it's now a year.
Okay, so for a full year. They're kind of hedging things by not giving you a response. Is there the possibility that a tantrum might ensue because of this bipartisan letter that is kind of pushing them into a corner, and then they might turn around and say no?
They can't say no any louder than they're saying it now. And we've long ago given up the thought that by sending candy, and Valentine's in our press statements, they're going to suddenly say, all right, we're going to now. They're not doing it. So it's either going to take a catastrophe, God forbid. Or maybe because I read too many books as a kid, I still believe reason will prevail. The president is going to need something that he really wants and that he can't get without the New York and New Jersey delegations. They'll make some sort of a deal. I actually have, by the way, what I call the grand bargain, which gives him all the ego and stroking that would motivate him.
Tell them what that is.
We don't care about if he gets credit or not. You know, we'll call it the Trump tunnel. But he actually, now this, we actually have this reported from a friend of his who we sent in there. And he goes, I don't care about a tunnel. No one can see it. What do I want my name on that for? That's a true, he wants a tower.
Could we build a tower on top of
it? We could put his face on the entrance to it. I will say, I don't want to, I bash the president for what he's doing to Gateway. I don't bash him for certain of the points he's had that have been good. It is known to everyone that when you build a project, when the government builds a project, they can't organize a two-car parade. And invariably, it's going to be, it'll cost more than if you give it to the private sector to build the same thing. There's tremendous waste. And the president said, where are you getting these numbers? $12 billion, $2 billion. And so when I got there, you know, I asked the staff who immediately, you know, defend their numbers. But sure enough, I'm going to tell you, by the time we build that tunnel, we'll have a few billion dollars off that price because we are taking it out for competitive bidding. We're getting ideas from the community, different business community, different than what we thought. The president was right about that. We also have some items. There are complicated government credits and so forth where we could maybe trade and up the contribution we're making. Governor Murphy, to his credit, put up an additional $600 million of New Jersey's money to build the Portal North, saying we can't wait on the federal government. I don't want to see a train plunge off into the river. So we're going to build that. We already have started. We've done 11 stages of construction on that bridge.
Tell me, what would be the lifespan? Like, what? So you're building this now, right? What's the shelf life? What do you think? Because in my view, lots of times we improve infrastructure, and by the time it's completed, it's already obsolete.
This is an amazing question, because the existing tunnel we were discussing, 110 years old, and it still works, still takes the trains over. Presumably, if we build as well, this new one would also last 110 years. But I ask this, and I did at my first meeting, I got a lot of, they laughed at me. But I said, you know, 110 years, what if we have hovercrafts in 50 years and we don't use trains anymore? Should we be putting $15 billion into a project based on technology that hasn't changed since 1910? You know, I think that's a fair question. You know, beam me up, Scotty, you know, from Star Trek. Who knows what will happen? But the real answer to that, Professor, we don't know what's coming. We only know what we have. We have to deal with what we have. But here's the horror of the whole thing. If the president calls up and says, I saw the film of your class here at Montclair State. I realize I'm wrong. I'm sending a check in the morning. It would take us 7 years to build this new tunnel. 7 years. And until it's built, obviously we can't use it. So we have to use this old one for at least 7 more years. You know, at some point, That's a risky deal. When the new one goes into operation, we're going to shut the old one down, and we need 18 to 24 months to rehabilitate that. Then we're going to have four tubes in. We'll have double the capacity, double the speed, and we'll really be able to get people off the roads into mass transit and be modern. But we're talking about 9 years before that is done if we started tomorrow.
Before we open it up to questions, so let's just assume that you've convinced some of these folks the rightness of your views. What can New Jerseyans do to help change this outcome or expedite the outcome?
Be involved. I mean, first of all, involvement has its own rewards because you realize that, you're just one person. And we all tend to just worry about ourselves. But there's a great satisfaction that comes from involving yourself in something more important than yourself, something grander than yourself. And being involved in the political process and things you believe in may not be a tunnel, but you'll find things that you believe in and get active, and you'll be, it will shock you, the impact that you individually can have on the process. You work in your local communities, you work in your legislative communities, you find people you believe in and back them, you campaign for them, you learn the issues, you read about people who have made great contributions in the past, and it will inform you, and you will find that it's as rewarding as anything in your life when you're involved in these grand scale projects. On the tunnel, email your congresspeople, let them know that you see what they're doing. The ones who are supporting it, by the way, they're
all of
New Jersey's delegation. We have one congressman, happens to be the one Republican, who is contrary to everything that the whole state otherwise goes for. He's in every meeting. I said, Congressman, I never thought you and I would be on the same page. But the answer is let them know, because when they're out there making statements against the administration, they're taking a risk. And when they get bolstered and get support and get praise from their constituents, it empowers them to keep going. And we need them to keep going.
So I know you have many, many questions, so let's have at it. Yes, sir.
So my first question is, as we're all aware, the climate is rapidly changing. It's becoming more and more unpredictable. So with that being said, let's say we do get this tunnel built, which would be absolutely amazing. What type of safeguards could be in place to prevent massive destruction, let's say, like another Sandy happens?
That was a great question. So our engineering today is a lot better, and there are diversion techniques for water well in advance of it reaching where we are now. The reinforcement inside the tunnel is also much better, and we're going to build a wider diameter of a tunnel because it's very hard to navigate in there. The train takes up almost the entire tube, so we can't get around and do maintenance the way we would otherwise do it. There's a great, if you go online in the UK, they have a project Crossrail, and we're learning from that. We're looking at their exam and we're taking their answers. So it's great. We're using the best practices. But that's a great question.
My question is, just to make sure I can phrase it right. Okay, so you know that, like you said, if there comes a policy point that President Trump really needs the delegation of New York and New Jersey, then maybe we can strike a deal with him in that sense. But I think there already is that policy point out there. And whether you like it or hate it, right, the president wants his border wall, and it's an infrastructure bill. And maybe if our senators, congressmen, of both New York and New Jersey say, yeah, okay, fine, you'll get funding for the infrastructure you want if you give us funding for the infrastructure we want. It seems to me that it's not just a one-sided thing. Although how vitally important this Gateway project is to many, including Donald Trump and his supporters, the border wall is of equal importance as towards protection of the country. So why would it, wouldn't invalidating what he deems as very important as not so important sort of make him want to invalidate what we find important? Like, shouldn't that be sort of a prime example of we stretch our back, we stretch ours?
First of all, that's a fantastic question. And I'm going to shock probably all of you now. If I were, if I had the levers of power, I would make that deal tomorrow. I don't think the wall is a symbol, in my view, but to a vast constituency led by Trump. And in the scope of things, if that's what it took, I would do it. 2 weeks ago, as chairman of Gateway, I went down and had an hour and a quarter meeting with Senator Schumer in his office. Senator Schumer, Gillibrand, Booker, and Menendez. And when I tell you that the wall is so off the table with these people, it's not even discussable. And I think that's equally idiotic as it is to block this vitally needed tunnel. And they have bet the Democrat farm on blocking this wall. Right or wrong, we could debate the wall for 3 hours. But to me, you know, our budget in the United States is trillions and trillions of dollars. $5 billion. Build a wall, do whatever you want over there. Just give me mine over here, and I would do it. And by the way, that goes to the heart of what the professor asked me, how did I get started? This country was built on compromise, and what you're talking about is compromise. And so I would make that compromise. Thank you for that.
Other questions?
Robbie, I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm going to talk in a minute. Okay, so will the fares increase to pay off the project? If so, will they decrease again when it's paid for?
So government 101, a tax or a fare increase that's imposed never goes down. They're permanent. There would be a lot of political blowback if fares were raised, but you can't have a brand new infrastructure and not expect, you have to pay the bill, and those who are benefiting from it, this is one argument, must pay more on their fare. I feel a little differently, and that's why I'm not governor. But my view is that if the train is improved, if we can get more people on the trains, what's going to happen? Fewer people will be on the bridges and tunnels with their cars. They are now going to be the beneficiaries of a smoother, faster ride because this tunnel was built. Through me, I would say we have to spread the burden on everyone who is benefiting by this new transportation infrastructure. And by the way, it would make the fare on New Jersey Transit, the fare increase, that much less. I will say, though, that Governor Christie did indicate when he supported the plan in 2016 that he would support a fare increase. And when you say when it's paid off, these things go for 30 years, you know, before the bonds are paid off. So you'll be as old as I am sitting here by the time that gets paid off.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
So,
great question.
Question.
infrastructure improvement project would clearly be beneficial to many groups in the area. And it would seem that you're only a few cents short of luck to say in terms of the amount of money that you have raised. So my question is, has it not been considered to court money from the three common carriers in the area to have them help subsidize the rest of the cost of the fund?
And they would be?
CSX, Norfolk Southern.
Oh. So we are, that's an amazing question.
Excellent students.
Evidently, you're doing a good job. This is a passenger rail, this rail link here. And so I haven't heard that before. It's an interesting thing, the nexus between the benefit to them and the cost. I can't make that case as well. Where I thought you were going, and I did try this in the first few months I was in office, failed, was to try to get the business community. I'm talking about the MAP, JP Morgan, the big hedge funds in New York, the big banks, the massive employers, kick in some money. You know, $6 billion. Geez, they pay the CEO. They will no longer be able to access a workforce if this tunnel closes. We've gotten some support, some, from the New York City Partnership, in which all these companies are members. It's a very powerful group. But they also don't want to alienate the present. And so, yes, we think it's a great idea. Oh, we love it, but nothing.
Do you think that they would support it without financially if they didn't feel there would be repercussions from the president, or do you think that that's a convenient excuse?
So I think with more education like this, and that's why this is, I hate to use corny, this is shining a light on our tunnel. And if we
There's
had,
light at the end, or?
Yeah, if we had the ability to go into corporate meetings and so forth, how would they not? And by the way, 25 million, 50 million to JP Morgan, it's nothing. And you multiply that, and before you know it, we can borrow. Oh, they'll lend us the money. They've all told us that. But when you borrow in the private sector, you're going to pay 6 or 7% interest. When you're borrowing from the federal government, it's 1.5%. When you're talking about billions of dollars, it's unaffordable.
We have time for one more question before we close. So, go ahead.
How you doing? This state is broke. This country is broke. We're at $22 trillion in debt as of May last year. Most of the debt in the state of New Jersey came from Governor Corzine. And during the Christie administration, we lost about 26 credit ratings. So we would have to pay that money back, multiple times at a higher rate because of the low debt rate. So we're not just coming from coffers where we have the money, so we would have to float bonds. New York might be a little bit better. I do remember the Bay of Pigs, and we used to, in the corridors of the middle school, we would have to sit down and put our head between our legs and basically kiss her. You know what? Goodbye. You know what? What's that going to do against nuclear warheads? I remember President Kennedy being shot. How the West was won, 100th anniversary to the day, it was Friday, and teacher, Mrs. Flanders, asked me to go into special ed class to speak to the teacher to see what happened since we were in the theater. And so I do remember this. But we just need to float bonds at a better rate, which we don't have. We're losing people in the state. We have a higher corporate tax rate. I could see your point where we do need it for the infrastructure, for 13% for 200,000 commuters, you say. We have to, you know, President Trump is probably going to need the border wall first. I don't believe in the way he's looking at it as a wall. I think with drones and helicopters and jeeps, you know, I think it could be handled at a cheaper level. But we need to strengthen.
Well, I don't, you know, first of all, $5 billion, I hate to say it, because it, but it's nothing in the federal government, just absolutely nothing. I mean, so it's the symbolism of the Democrats giving in to what they believe to be a cruel immigration policy. It's a symbol. And, you know, our symbol in New York is this tunnel. But we have, if it's, while yes, it's the 200,000 people on the train, but if that tunnel goes down, the property people will flee this state, not the 200,000, but all the rest of us, because we will not be able to afford. House prices will plummet, and people will leave the area. And the few of us left, the property taxes will be. Can I just, this gentleman who is in the back has been waiting, and I'll stay and answer.
And I will say there are people with questions at 5, they may have. If you need to leave, you may leave, but
please.
We'll continue.
And thank you all for your amazing attention.
And this will be the last question, so
great.
You don't have to leave.
Thank
just
you.
Take a seat.
Or I can, yeah.
So, three things. One, basically, this project is not just for the New York, New Jersey area, but also for Amtrak itself. So, if I'm not mistaken, basically, the Northeast Corridor contributes a great deal of income to Amtrak. So I think there needs to be a little more lobbying in that perspective. You know what I'm saying? Next thing is, when I last talked to you at the Ryder College, I gave you the idea in regard to the fact that the church basically could be additional land. That could be tax income, property tax income that could contribute to the thing in another direction, being multiple sources of income to help pay some of the loans. But then last but not least, Tesla has basically advocated for a variety of tax transit solutions. Have you considered bringing him in or his team in to help with the project?
The your first point, by the way, Amtrak is giving us gobs of money. So they are anteing up. The idea about the dirt is a great one, which you did raise down there on my college tour. And it is something that we're definitely going to look at, what we can do with this dirt, whether it's selling it as fill, build, you know, doing infill in the river, who knows, but it was a good idea. And this last one, if we tomorrow change course and brought Elon Musk in and you know, he has a boring machine also, and asked him to do it. Because of the way the government works, we would be set back 3 or 4 years in the approval process. We really, we're too into this design where we are now to go back. You all have been great,
and
I want to
thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.